What's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're back for Teacher's Lounge. Man, hope you listened to the last presentation, because that was a fire one. We're at block height 671,069, and the current price is 52,200 and, or it just switched, 52,300. So, man, Nick, Where do we start this week? I think we should just start with where everyone's head's at with the price movement and all that good stuff. So how you feeling this week, dude?
Today's been a fucking great day. The weather is shit outside, but everything going on in the Bitcoin world is amazing. Like I think the highest price I saw today was 52,000, like 600 something, and I'm just constantly thinking, man, they haven't even started printing the 1.9 trillion yet. And then Chad Saylor has taken out, you know, $900 million in debt. Zeus, by the way, I wish I could get that type of loan. Dude. And then we had a BlackRock saying that they're dabbling in Bitcoin, which, you know, they've bought already and they're still buying in a, dude, it's just, it's bullishness from all angles. I don't see how you cannot be bullish at a time like this.
I think you'd have to have your head under a rock and not be paying attention, because
maybe your head hit by a rock.
Yeah, that's probably true too. I mean, we're what? $1,000 and some change under hitting that $1 trillion market cap that we're all looking at. We're currently at $973 billion. So, man, this next week, it's gonna get so crazy. It's like we said it every week, Nick, and everyone here, all the people that come out and hung out with us, we've said it every week. We know, or at least we think we're prepared for what's going to happen. But when it happens, we're just all like, what is going on? My mind is blown. And it's hard to stay humble. You know, at least we have Matt O'Dell telling us stay humble out there, because I sure as hell ain't staying humble. Like, let's be honest, guys. Like, this is crazy stuff. So, guys, what are you guys' thoughts? How are you feeling? You know, this isn't just me and Nick babbling over here. Let us know what you felt this week and what your thoughts are on the price movement, the market cap, the news from Chad Saylor, and we'll get into the list, because we have a few things on the list, but I think we'll probably sit on this one for a minute.
Oh, dude, man, I have been waiting for so goddamn long to cross 50K. I mean, I like Babe Ruth, I was calling this shot for years. And everybody who knows me in real life is like, oh, yeah, he's, you know, he's saying 50K, whatever. Because I'm that guy. God damn, it feels so fucking good. But, you know, what's interesting is, like, I'm kind of receding in. I now have, like, a boilerplate, I don't talk about this for free anymore. I don't have time in my life to really go down the rabbit hole with you. I believe it's inevitable. You should buy it. That's my official advice. I can't really talk about it more than that. The resources are out there. So it's weird, because like I almost don't want to talk about it anymore, which helps me stay humble. But man, it feels so goddamn good. Yeah, Bap, I'm the same way. There's some great educational resources. So
Apex, jump in. I saw you unmuted yourself.
No, dude, because you were talking about being humble. How can you be humble, bro, when you have, like, morons like fucking Houdini and Schiff and Taleb tweeting shit about Bitcoin, like, and Bitcoin's at 50K? You just can't be humble, bro. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I got to take issue with Matt Odell being humble, too. That dude is all caps right now. So I don't think there's an ounce of humility in his bones right now.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is try to stay humble, but we all know we're not going to be humble. Like, I mean, I've been telling Nick for a couple weeks now, my favorite Nick is Bull Market Nick, because this motherfucker is just like, he's going to be a problem. Like,
I mean, I do be saying some retarded shit sometimes, and it's been like that since we went past 20K.
Yeah, I keep shooting Nick like, man, Nick will say something dumb, like just hilarious, not just dumb, just hilarious to me and Jestifer, and I'll just be like, Bull Market Nick, my favorite, and I can only imagine what this kid's gonna be. And the whole Zoomer Council, these guys, they're already ridiculous, and man, they're gonna be a problem. And I know all the plebs out there are gonna be so savage. It's gonna be so much fun to be a part of. It's like too much dopamine rush. Like it's so stimulating to be a part of it that it's almost like what CB says. Like you kind of need to like unplug a little bit at times and be like, all right, guys, like don't bother me with this shit, because I like you don't want to see me getting crazy on you. You're just like, have fun staying poor to all your friends in real life, and they're starting to hate you, and you're like, guys, I just want to help you get you on the arc, and you know, enjoy with the prosperity with me. But if you're gonna be hard-headed,
yeah, I mean, I would advise everyone, this has saved me so many goddamn brain cells, make like a boilerplate response that's two paragraphs with like three or four links and a general thing like, yes, I always advocate buying Bitcoin. I don't have a price target except infinity. Have a boilerplate response you can text somebody back, because the DMs, if they're not already flooding in, they will, and it's gonna drive you insane. So I've like been receding inwards, you know, like I just want to respond so that I don't have to go down the same 20 hours of conversation with the same person, because a lot of these people they don't care about Bitcoin. They only care about dollars and Bitcoin's representation in dollars. So a lot of the people who are interested now are not like, don't actually care about it. They see it as a get rich opportunity. Now, you know, you can harness that, but man, I can't advocate enough just having a boilerplate like response.
We need like little business cards that just say, buy Bitcoin. No, don't buy a shitcoin because it costs less. You know, no, it's not gonna go to zero. You know, just something that answers like the most common generic questions, just like all in like one little paragraph, and just hand it out to people whenever they try and ask you about it.
Dude, so message. I don't know if you guys, but like in my WhatsApp groups with like my Latin posse here in Miami. You know, I'm from Venezuela, and most of my friends are Venezuelan and from all over the world and shit. But they really like the sticker shit, you know, those little stickers on WhatsApp. So that's just my response now. Every time somebody fucking asks me something about Bitcoin, I just send them like a picture of a dick or something like that. Like, dude, like, just don't ask me anymore, bro. Like, I've been telling you this shit for so long. Like, seriously, bro. To here, have a dick.
Let's go.
Yo, that's awesome.
I mean, hey, Jim's been ahead of the game. He's had the Bitcoin card for years now, so maybe we all have to get on that level and create business cards to show Bitcoin. Man, that's so funny. I'm dying.
Do it.
Dying over here. All right. Well, I guess. I mean, anyone want to get some thoughts in? Because We can go down the list of things we have and keep this conversation flowing. But if no one wants to, actually, Ben, I want to hear Ben's ideas, because he can get into some technical stuff if he's still around.
What?
I mean, not only bullish on the price, but bullish on Taproot or what?
Ben, Taproot.
Yeah, Taproot. We got the meeting yesterday. States. It was pretty decent. people decided on like a start time, which sadly isn't for a while, but it's probably gonna be like mid-July is when we start the activation process. And the only thing left really to debate is if people want a UASF at the end of the timeout if miners don't activate. And it's looking like people won't, but we'll see.
Ooh. Wow. It's going to get
what
wild.
What side do you want, Ben?
I think locking we should. Yeah, I think locking on timeout true. I think we should have the default UASF, but I don't think Core will, which was probably fine.
From what I understand, their perspective is they don't want it to seem like a dev takeover or like devs imposing their will, which is why people are pushing for false.
Yeah, that's what like most of like the major Core devs were saying, and like I totally understand that point. Like, there's been so much fucking drama with like, you know, blacklist versus blocklist, and like, can they have the white paper in the repo and stuff like that? That they've had enough drama and they don't just want to give like more drama and or like more fire and fodder for like shitcoiners to say, oh, Bitcoin centralized because, you know, they put in an upgrade. But I mean, I understand. And like, either way, Taproot would probably be activated within the first month or two, and the UASF probably won't matter. But, you know, it's still a good thing to talk about.
And could you sort of like, I mean, I've done some reading on it, but I know you're like better to go straight to the source. Like, could you just kind of explain like what the Taproot UASF, which I believe is a user activated soft fork, what that means for the Bitcoin blockchain and like what it means for like using Bitcoin as like a, you know, as a user?
And the UASF doesn't, it's just like a way to activate the upgrade. So like, basically what it would mean is like, if it's been like, it's been a year since we started the activation period and miners never got to the 90% threshold to signal, then instead what we do is just, we'd say, this last difficulty adjustment period, you guys have to signal, otherwise your blocks are invalid. So like, they have to activate the upgrade. And so that's like the way to do it. Like, as a user, you wouldn't really know. It's just, after the activation period is done, you'd have the thing Taproot active. You could start like using it if it's been implemented in like your wallet or something. But as a user, it's not a huge deal. It's mostly just like, do you want to do that? The thing, I guess there is no deal if, say if we don't do the default UASF, and then, you know, like kind of like with SegWit, where there was no default UASF, and then to get a UASF, they had to like compile and make a separate client that was distributed. And so the people had to download like a different implementation of Bitcoin and run that to enforce the user activated soft fork. If we get like a scenario like that, then like as a user, and you wanted to enforce the UASF, you'd have to download that new client. However, the beauty of like what we're using now instead of previously is BIP8, where with this we no longer have to these two clients will now be 100% compatible. Where if you have a UASF client, it's gonna force the miners to signal. So the clients that aren't the UASF client will notice the signal and activate at the same time as the UASF clients. So I think that'll be really nice. So even if you aren't an attentive user and just upgraded your node, you will still see the activation parameters.
And what is there, like, is it like security benefits from Taproot, or is it like fee savings? Like, what exactly is the upgrade supposed to accomplish?
Taproot's mostly just supposed to be, it's just like some optimizations and privacy enhancements. So things like multi-sig will now look like a normal, like standard user wallet. So that makes it more private and it's a lot cheaper. And then, there's some like optimizations where like signatures are slightly faster to verify and, stuff like that. But like, I mean, by and large, it's just like optimizations and privacy enhancements.
And like a Lightning channel would look the same as a standard just transaction on the blockchain, right?
Yeah, yeah. So like Lightning and basically every second layer protocol looks like a standard like user wallet transaction, because like basically every single like second layer thing is just like a multi-sig and then some off-chain logic, so like a Lightning channel, a DLC, even things like Liquid. It's all just really just multi-sig with some other fancy things you do off-chain. So, you know, if we do get Taproot, then all these things will look exactly the same. So, you know, you could withdraw money from an exchange and then send it somewhere. And today they could see like, oh, that's to a Lightning channel. Like, oh, that's probably a DLC, or, oh, that's, they sent their money to Liquid. But afterwards they'd be like, did he send it to cold storage? Did he do it to Lightning? They have no idea. So it could break a lot of on-chain heuristics.
So that sounds like a big benefit then, with the rise of on-chain analytics just like growing so quickly.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice, but you know, should be hopefully sometime this year.
Bullish on Taproot with Ben the Carman. Let's go.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys. Well, one thing I noticed, I guess if you listen to the beginning of the show, you noticed that we were talking about 50K. Bitcoin broke 50K. I don't know if you guys caught documenting Bitcoin's tweet, but Bitcoin breaks 50K as banks are closed on President's Day. So if you're a noob out there, I think you may be starting to understand why we're so bullish on Bitcoin. But another thing that I saw today, I'm not sure if you guys caught Marty Bent's newsletter this morning, but Bitcoin breaking 50K and moving in on the $1 trillion market cap is now the sixth biggest currency in the world, minus silver and gold. So we're only behind a few currencies, and it's like, man, it seems like this is going to happen a lot quicker than we all expected. We were talking about, I think it was 14th last week, and now we're only behind the Eurozone, Japan, US, China, and the UK as the biggest currencies in the world. So people are still sleeping on Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is just slowly knocking off these other currencies. And man, it's people are going to have a rude awakening when this price starts exploding, and they're like, oh my God, I am so late to Bitcoin. I'm pretty sure we said it last week that once you need Bitcoin, you're already late. Like if you don't have it before you need it, then you're late on Bitcoin. And like we've all been saying on Twitter, this hashtag short squeeze, the whole world's short on Bitcoin. And even us who've been stacking for a while, we all know we don't have enough Bitcoin, and we've been stacking. Like if people don't wake up soon, man, it's going to be the mad dash to the door is just going to be insane. And that 100K mark that we've all been joking about for months now, it looks so easy. It's like it's just a double away. Like that's nothing. This year is gonna get absolutely insane. Like half a mil per Bitcoin is like not even out of the question right now. It's kind of everyone's kind of starting to lean like that bullish. It's hard not to get extremely bullish out there. And even like we said earlier, our humble guide are all caps. Everyone's all caps. It's like everyone's extremely bullish. And it's just fun to be here. Like it's fun to hang out with you guys and bullshit and watch this go to the moon and past the moon and just know that we were right. We've been right. And it's fulfilling and it's satisfying and just, man, like we can't get too content with what we have and what we're doing, but it sure feels good right now. But we're gonna start making these marks a little bigger, you know. Like I said before the show, we're only gonna start celebrating at probably a $1 trillion market cap, and then we'll move up the price movements by multiples of 10. So the next excitement will be 60, 70, 80, 90, 100K. And that just it's just hilarious to me that we've already normalized this price. And here we are. We're just like, yeah, it is what it is. Like, what's up? You know, this is Bitcoin. Learn, read about it.
What price exactly do we hit a trillion market cap? It's like 54, 55.
I think it's 53, like 367 or 53,600 or something like that. So we're at
a moving target.
53,700.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a moving target. We're currently at the market cap of 973 billion. So we don't need too much more to get there.
But yeah, so tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess probably. But I wanted to bring something up on the market cap because there is a small minority of our friends on Twitter that have been ringing the bell of the idea that there is no market cap on Bitcoin. And I'm going to read Jimbo, my buddy Jimbo's tweet over here. So he put Bitcoin will reveal just how broken market cap is as a concept. And I've been hearing that for a little bit, and so I was like, please explain, sir. And he goes, market cap is a low information metric with convenient units. It stands in for what we really want to know, but is unquantifiable, which is how much do people value it? And so as Bitcoin prices increases, its market cap will shatter notions of fair value as understood by legacy finance. And I thought that's, it's, like, I had to reread it a couple times, and we always say it all the time, you know, Bitcoin has no ceiling because the U.S. dollar has no floor. They can print it to infinity. And I'm starting to lean towards that idea of, like, the market cap really doesn't matter, but it's the best metric we have to calculate what where we're going and what is exactly happening. And so does anyone have thoughts on that? Or because this is a new concept to me.
Well, I mean, market cap in the space has always been kind of bullshit to begin with because you have shitcoin, right? So if you have a shitcoin, no limit on the supply or like a gazillion, units as their supply cap, and somebody trades it for $5, then their market cap exceeds that of Bitcoin, just because somebody, it's five times, a gazillion or whatever, right? So it's a flawed concept, but it's really, I guess when you're comparing, things against each other, it's the only thing we have.
I think hash rate is more relevant.
Wait, what was that, Randy?
I said I think network hash rate is more relevant because at least it's a signal that is telling us how much energy is being exerted, and that indicates infrastructure. And so to me, that is a more important thing, but the thing is that generally speaking, people are gonna, if anything, just like price action captures people's attention, market cap capture people's attention. And I think when Bitcoin's market cap exceeds Apple's, I think it's going to be a big deal and capture a lot more attention. So in that respect, it's more of like for outsiders to,
FOMO.
It'll capture people's, it'll capture, so that's what I think that it's really useful for, is just to help attract people to Bitcoin.
Bullish. Well, we're about to hit that trillion, so we're at the big boy table now. Weinekis, did you want to chime in?
I just wanted to say, let's a trilly.
Let's go. To Randy's point, the Bitcoin hash rate, according to bitbo.io, I've really started to like this website. The last 24 hours is 155.84 exahashes. So the hash rate is steady climbing, man. Even more bullish news out there.
It's like we knew this was going to happen this whole time. Like, right. We knew that, the properties that Bitcoin has, like, it's going to be the chosen money for the world. And but then just to watch it all happen, like before your eyes, is where it gets really crazy. And and seeing Bitcoin operate as the sixth largest currency in the world, and then see a massive amount of energy being allocated to it, where like the most effective use of that energy for a huge portion of the energy being created is to mine Bitcoin with it, is to secure the Bitcoin blockchain. And that's like a super important task to be done, and a profitable task for a whole, like a huge employer all over the world. So yeah, loving it.
Yeah. But so
crazy to watch.
Jumping off of what Randy said, as paying very much close attention to network hash rate and then incorporating the idea of energy perhaps as a better measure of the value or capitalization of resources that Bitcoin is or represents, I personally, one of my favorite metrics, and I think this will become more popular and probably improved on, is the idea of Bitcoin energy value equivalents. And basically valuing Bitcoin in relative terms to fiat with regards to joules expended. And it's a very fascinating idea. Because as Nick Carter says, Bitcoin is endogenous, it's self-referential. And so how do you refer to the market capitalization of something which is self-referential? Because you can't refer to other things with it. So if you can have it refer to another thing, which it kind of is already, which is energy, that gives you a way to like meaningfully communicate about it. You have to get kind of philosophical here, but it's very fascinating to me. So I'll link the art. I think Charles Capriol talks about it.
Dope. Yeah, I link it, and if I can get it, I'll put it in the show notes.
You know, I'll have to do some research, but it shouldn't be too difficult to actually create an indicator and trading view that actually shows like joules per Satoshi, but I'll have to do a little research, but that might be a cool little exercise to mess around with.
Yeah, that'd be dope. I'd add that to my charts. I don't look at charts much, but I'd add that for sure.
Hey, did you see that Stool Presidente guy, like, hating himself?
Yeah, I was going to bring it up.
And then he was tweeting about how he is in some like shit trade and stuff, and like he should have just stayed in fucking Bitcoin, man. It's like,
oh, did he follow it up? I didn't see the follow up one.
Yeah, he was in some other like shit trade and was losing money, and then you know, he's like, "Oh, Bitcoin was 10K like in August or some shit."
Yeah, so
he's never gonna buy Bitcoin ever. I was like, "Yeah, you probably aren't. You'll be paid in it."
He's gonna buy the 100K. Watch, dude. Like, all right. So for those listening that aren't aware, Dave Portnoy came out on Twitter today, and as Davey Day Trader, he came out and he was losing his mind that Bitcoin just a few months ago was 11K and it's now at 51K. And he goes, man, Bitcoin is the only thing that continues to go up, but I will never buy Bitcoin ever. And I have it over here in my notes as Dave Portnoy just falling into Bitcoin derangement syndrome. And we see this all over the place. We bring up like Peter Schiff all the time. Like everyone said, Norio Rubini, Francis Coppola, and all the other no-coiners that will continue to fight Bitcoin and refuse to buy it because I can only imagine ego investment of some sort, that they're smarter than the market and they know what's best and they miss the train and so they will never buy Bitcoin. But it was a beautiful video, I can't lie. It was very... I can't even think of the word right now. It was a very fulfilling video to wake up to this one. I'm like, yeah, man, it sucks to have such weak hands.
Dude, but the thing about it is that, remember when we were all like frothing at wanting him because he has so much clout and following, yep, with this bullshit, when we were like at 10K, right? And we're like, come on, man, you know, you got to learn about Bitcoin. Oh, he has Bitcoin and everybody's going nuts. And But now at 50K, he's like, fuck, he's so irrelevant. Who gives a shit? Like, have fun staying poor, bro. Like,
yo, what was the first like shitcoin that he bought right off the bat? It was like,
that's cool. The Link and some other shit.
Yeah, Winklevoss shilled Link to him, dude.
The Twin shilled.
Like, they just wrecked him right off the bat. They're like, oh, yeah, like, Bitcoin's cool, but come on our trading platform and buy some shit coins. And what he was out within, like, a week, if that, and now he's just wrecked. But I think Apex has a very good point. Now, in hindsight, we're all like, it really doesn't matter, you know? All his Barstool sports people, he's doing his customers or his fan base a disservice, but to us, it's like, whatever, bro. Like, dude,
that guy, his currency is attention and engagement, right? So, you know, engagement's a shit coin, you know, compared to Bitcoin. But for him, like, you know, it's a lot cheaper, you know, I guess, to, you know, if you want engagement, first and foremost, to be a Bitcoin hater than to actually put your money in Bitcoin at this point. So, you know, to him, he's making the money that, you know, he wants to make, which is attention. But at the end, you know, he's going to be, he's going to have fun staying poor.
Yeah, man. It's quite hilarious to watch. And I mean, since we're on this point, we might as well bring up Talib. How about them apples this week? Like, what the?
Oh, I'm not reading his book anymore. I was literally like a third of the way through
that
this book.
That shit kind
of
made me sad, honestly.
Go on, why to get
you know what? You gotta
I read all his fucking books and like love everything he usually has to say, but I don't know. I'm still trying to like have some hope and hope and like feel like this is his boating accident type of incident, but
I don't know. This is just him capitulating on the whole safety
right
saga that they had together, right? Because obviously we know that he wrote the foreword for Safety's book. And then when the whole COVID shit started, Safety's like, fuck this mask wearing bullshit, which a lot of us I know agree with. Maybe not Surfer Jim. I know he likes to wear a mask. yeah, man. And then obviously Taleb was pro, like, you know, all fucking cucked up with, you know, being fearful of COVID. And this is just him. Who knows? And then they blocked each other on Twitter or some shit. And this is just like him throwing like his last, you know, middle finger out to Safety and saying fuck BTC and fuck you, you know.
Well, yeah.
Wait, so him and Safety got in like the dispute? Yeah, because yeah, and I saw you read. I didn't read that.
Like, I mean, if you saw the tweet, it's obviously pointed at Safety, and I think Francis Poulier had a little helping hand in there. But if you read the tweet that came out, he said something about how he's selling his Bitcoin because, quote unquote, the volatility. But at the very end of the tweet, he says something on the lines of Bitcoiners have.
Yeah, we're amoebas.
Yeah, and, we're amoebas and we're COVID deniers and basically that we're stupid and all that. And it's literally that was literally just like a knock
on. It's his boating accident.
If he's smart, but honestly, I think Apex is right. I personally think it's just one of those things of, oh, someone in Bitcoin is stupid and I dislike him. Therefore, I'm not going to hold Bitcoin anymore, which in itself is a retarded ass logic and statement coming from Talib. But
yeah,
it's still like the volatility FUD that he was saying, it was just, it's like, dude, it's been volatile the whole time you've been in Bitcoin, but now that it's hitting 50K,
he's a trader. Like his history is trading.
Exactly.
Like, traders love volatility.
Exactly. That's exactly the point.
I don't buy the volatility thing. It's something else. If I could guess, the same kind of weird, freakish energy that Bitcoin Twitter has that brought and lured Michael Saylor in. Because remember, a year ago today, Michael Saylor did not give a fuck about Bitcoin. Like, and now he's all we talk about. And now he's executing a, you know, whole attack on the US dollar. But this time last year, he didn't care about it. But I think he was lured in. I've had a lot of friends lured in by the the just incredibly reinforcing narrative of the hardcore Bitcoin Twitter people. But on the other hand, if you deviate from that in any of some of the ancillary ideology things, it could be really hard. You know, I kind of do myself, but I don't really talk or want to get into that. But it's not, that's not the point. But like, I think some people just take shit too personally. And he probably got way too personal and lost sight. I think a lot of it had to do with how hardcore Saifedean feels about a lot of the COVID stuff. So I think if I could predict, I think Taleb just is too knee-jerk too hard. I think he's...
He's always been pretty emotional about things, and he's always had a temper, you know, which is kind of weird because, like, he seems so measured in his, well, I guess he's not that measured in his writings, but at least he's more, you know, put together and, you know, logical in his writings. Whereas, like, on Twitter, he's a fucking maniac. you know, he goes after people. He's not afraid to say what's on his mind, kind of like Safe, to be honest. You know, they're kind of two peas in the same pod as far as that's concerned. But I'm pretty sure you guys are right in that it was, you know, Saifedean's reaction to all the stuff that's been going on with COVID that set him off, because Taleb since the very beginning was like, oh, this is like the end of the fucking world. So
Dude, those guys, can't two
Lebanese brothers just get along? Like, what the hell?
They're identical, dude. And you know, there's like the academics, it just shows how egotistical they are, because I love Safe, man. And, you know, I believe a lot, you know, I align myself a lot with the way he thinks. And obviously he's a solid Bitcoiner, and, you know, we've all gotten so much from him. But even him at the end, he's like, oh, well, guess what, guys, I have somebody new that's going to write a forward to replace Taleb's. Uncle Chad Saylor's going to write the forward now and replace Taleb's on the Bitcoin standard.
Taleb, no longer my friend, new friend, Chad Saylor.
It's so childish.
Taleb is also from Lebanon, who has like huge currency issues as well. So it's also like pretty surprising.
Yeah, man.
Honestly, Chad could buy it up. Way better forward, though, just saying.
I don't know, dude. That forward is pretty good. If you go back and reread that forward now, like, it was on point when it came out, but if you read it now, it's almost even more on point now. But I'm sure Chad Saylor can pull up a pretty good forward to the Bitcoin standard. So
it's just a plot to get to buy another copy of the Bitcoin standard.
Exactly.
Well, bro, I didn't buy the first the same book. Oh, with a different forward.
Yo, hey, first version, though. Which one's going to be worth more, the first edition or the second edition?
I just want to buy the forward.
I'm pretty happy I got my signed first edition one. That might be worth something.
Hey, there you go.
I've actually seen Safe speak in Miami.
Well, speaking of Miami, we got a few Miami heads in here. What are your guys' thoughts on, what's it, your mayor coming out full Bitcoin? Bullish as fuck on Bitcoin for the city? Like, let's go.
Dude, the city runs on Ponzi schemes. It's just part of the theme.
By the Ponzi. Ponzi is Sapu. Oh,
dude,
shit.
We're the city of Ponzi's. Like, there's no Ponzi that we're not getting involved in.
Yeah. Florida is notorious, huh? But I see it as super bullish, and you know, I don't follow politicians at all. Like, I've never been interested in that. But obviously, I am paying attention because I do live here, and I'm a Bitcoiner. So I'm like, yeah, let's go. Let's see what you got, man. I mean, like all politicians, like, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, right? Like, cause they're mostly talking. All bark and no bite, but let's see. Maybe this time I'm wrong, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I would 100% agree with you. I've seen a few of his tweets, and it seemed a little buzzwordy. That was before his official announcement that Bitcoin, or they're looking into using Bitcoin as the city's treasury or what have you. And like a couple tweets before, it was a little buzzwordy, and you're just like, okay, we'll see what happens. But it seems like he kind of gets it. So it's interesting to see it play out, and it will be interesting to see it play out. And we've been talking about that for a while of Bitcoiners breaking the fifth pillar and infiltrating the powers that be, being a part of the government. And it's going to get interesting.
It's buzzwordy, like, you know, remember the last bull run and then that, what was it, the Long Island iced tea, yeah. And then they put block.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. But this is now, like, on another playing field, like, on the government level. Like, oh, yeah, Bitcoin's, like, because it's, you know, it's
important. Kodak's going to come out with an ASIC miner or something. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, dude.
Don't be surprised for a Miami coin in the future. Like, we're going to shitcoin you guys, too.
Do you think he shitcoins? That's what my question is.
I don't know. Miami's got a lot of shitcoiners. I'm sure some of them have.
There's a lot of shitcoiners. I can attest to that.
Put some ETH on the balance sheet.
Dude, so remember the North American Bitcoin Conference?
I didn't know that, but I heard about it. Yeah, I heard it was pretty shitcoinery.
Were you there?
There was like Dash Lambos and stuff in Miami. Yeah. Like
that was in
Dash covered
in January of 2018, right when the shit was crashing, right? And it was held here in downtown in some hotel. And dude, I was like, oh shit, all like, because I was stoked from Bitcoin since the beginning, right? I've been to Bitcoin since like late 2016, right? So I was all stoked throughout 2017. And then I'm like, yeah, man, I'm gonna go to my first Bitcoin conference. Dude, man, the first person I run into walking into this shit was Crypto Man Ran. Like, you know, like with a camera on him, bro, like talking about all, you know, and next to him was like, holy shit, dude. And all the vendors were like shilling some token. I'm like, I paid money for this. And then when people got up on stage, they were shilling all time. It was just a shill fest, bro. It was nauseating, to be honest. As a Bitcoiner, dude, that shit was nauseating.
Yeah, that sounds fun, dude. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So the Bitcoin conference coming in now, the Bitcoin 2021 in June, that's refreshing, right? Because it's just like, you know, it seems like it's just hardcore Bitcoin.
Bro, I was at 2019. Let me tell you, the shitcoiners will arrive. They will arrive. So be prepared mentally and physically. They will arrive.
Yeah, but Bitcoiners are coming in strong. Yeah. Apex is right.
I guess it's a good time to hand out those little business cards with the links.
It's a good time to hand out some fisticuffs, yo.
You know what's gonna be? I'll tell you what's bullish about Miami. The Bitcoin conference is gonna be the after parties, right?
Like, hey, let's go! Yeah, you guys better show us a good time down there, dude. I mean, we will. I already been telling Nico that I'm going to a special place that has a number for a name, and
11.
We know that spot. Everybody knows that spot.
Yeah, Nico's been chilling that for a while, so shit's about to get degenerate over there.
Bro, Nico's a shitcoiner. No,
oh, damn.
I'm just joking, bro.
You did him like that.
Damn, bro.
Damn, bro. Nick, are you about to go into the abyss with us or what?
I'm doing all the fucking degen shit. just like a bit
bothered. We'll degen you guys out.
Yeah.
No, dude. Yo, just wait till y'all get a hold of Jackie, because we're fucking him up. We're there.
Dude, I was in Clubhouse.
Is he coming?
I was in Clubhouse paying attention to this shit, and then all of a sudden I get pinged by Nick, or was it Jackie, or whoever it was. And it was Jackie, Sam, Nick, all the Zoomer Council, as you guys say. And they're like, Apex, dude, what's happening in Miami, bro? You're taking care of us, right? And Jackie, dude, who's a character, he's like, yeah, man, you know, I want you to be my chaperone. I'm like, okay, man, just, you know, talk to your mom, and, you know, because 17 years old, is your mom hot? I'll talk to her. Let her know that you're in Japan. Don't worry, bro. Like, these guys are gonna degen hard.
Oh man, yeah. I definitely indoctrinated Nick a little bit. I wet his toes at Bitblock Boom, so he's gonna be ready. He'll be ready.
Yeah, we've heard the stories, man. And you guys, Hoddle's been telling the story. He's been chilling that story.
Oh man, it's so funny. All right, guys. All right. Well, enough of the degen hour. We could probably go degen the whole show, but I got a few things left on this list. and we're getting close to the hour mark. So last week, I'm pretty sure it was last week, right, Nick? We were talking about Bitcoin bans and all that FUD that was going around. And this week, we have the news about Nigeria that apparently, I think we brought it up last week. We did bring it up last week that they were banning, or banks were banning their customers that were using Bitcoin or crypto. And this week, we figured out that even though they've banned Bitcoin, the price is like going over market price. I think I saw that the current price for Bitcoin in Nigeria is 67K in American dollars. So
he amended that actually.
Oh, really?
Alex did. Yeah, he miscalculated. It's still inflated, but it's not that dramatically. Sorry to.
No, that's good. That's good because I didn't see that. But still, the point stands nonetheless. We were talking about it last week that, you know, let a government try to ban Bitcoin. And on the one hand, it's only going to hurt its citizens. And on the other hand, it's not going to stop Bitcoin, nor will it stop Bitcoiners from buying Bitcoin. It's like the very axiom that we always talk about. If your government is banning Bitcoin, that just proves that you probably need to own Bitcoin. And here we have a real life example of that happening. At least the Bitcoiners down there understand what's going on. So if their government's banning them, they're going to figure out how to get Bitcoin. So here's to the government banning Bitcoin FUD, because I sure as hell know the majority of us in here aren't going to stop buying Bitcoin no matter what. It's just like, we're built different. It's already taken over our brain, and we realize that Bitcoin is superior money. There's nothing they can do to stop it. And if they try, it's just going to hurt its citizens. So, you know, like, fuck them. If they are going to hurt their citizens that bad, then should we really listen to them? And, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to live, but I sure as hell know that I won't be stopped buying Bitcoin, and I will be Bitcoining for as long as I'm alive, as long as I'm breathing, and as long as blocks are coming in. So shouts out to our brothers in Nigeria buying Bitcoin, because it's inspiring, man. Like, I don't know if you guys saw that news, but all I could think was, like, let's fucking go. You know, like, you can't stop Bitcoin, and governments are figuring this out.
Yeah, did you see on the Nigerian chamber, I believe, the incredible clip of one of the speakers on the floor saying that our currency is worthless, Bitcoin is making our currency obsolete. Like, that got me fired up.
Can't get better press. Hit it, Andrew.
Yeah, dude. So I was going to say, this makes me, because I get that question a lot, like, what happens if Bitcoin gets banned? And my answer is basically, governments have two options, and both kind of screw them, which is great, because, you know, like many of you, I'm not a fan of the government. They can either ban it, which, you know, like in Nigeria, that hurts their people, and that just makes Bitcoin more valuable in their region. Like anything that gets banned, you know. And since it hurts the people, the government actually gets hurt as well, because basically the government is just a parasite that feeds off of the productivity of people. So yeah, they can either ban it, or their other option is to just deal with it, capitulate, buy it, and start working with it, which in that case, they're totally screwed. I think it's kind of ironic, because like, I think as Bitcoiners, we just want the people we like to own Bitcoin. But in my opinion, I think even the people we hate, like even like the globalist type people or the elite or the cult, whatever you want to call these like parasites, basically, we win once they buy it. Because then once they buy it, they're operating on an entirely different monetary system. They can't create money out of thin air and, you know, go to war with it and all this immoral stuff with it. So either way, we're pretty fucking bullish.
Let's go. It's all good for Bitcoin.
Did you see what Alex Gladstein posted earlier today? He was talking about how Bitcoin was trading. I think he said at 65K on local Bitcoins in Nigeria. If you ban Bitcoin, the price is going to run up and people are going to find a way to use it. Like, you can't stop it. Like, banning it is just, it's just a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as much a premium as he said. He corrected it, but like, you're right, because if you look at how Bitcoin trades on BISC, the no KYC exchange, like Bitcoin, like real Bitcoin, if you're buying Bitcoin from like a Coinbase transaction or like a block reward from miner, that Bitcoin often, and I believe, will continue to fetch more of a premium in the future. And similar, like non-KYC Bitcoin, that stuff trades above spot on most exchanges, because Bitcoin that is harder to acquire is more valuable to people.
Facts.
Let's go.
Dude, if you can't ban drugs, like... You know, if you can't ban drugs and drugs find their ways, you know, find themselves like going through the borders, like, how do you ban Bitcoin, dude? If Bitcoin's like, I don't know what's the word, but it's, you know, it's not tangible. You can just pull it from the air, basically, right? So good luck with that.
I was just thinking about that, because like, at the end of the day, like, your Bitcoin stack, it comes down to you having knowledge of a number. Which, how in the world could you make that illegal? I think the only reason that you could make information illegal is like that. That just sounds like something straight out of North Korea. It's like they have to be doing something nefarious to like actually take that step to say, like, having knowledge of 24 words like is now this illegal thing that you should be jailed for.
Dude, that's a really good point. I have a question for you guys, actually. Like, yes, if you ban Bitcoin, you're not going to stop it, just like alcohol or drugs, or, you know, like you can't even stop drugs from going in prisons and stuff. Yeah, it's a really good point. But at the same time, like, and what do you guys think would happen if they tried to do that? Like, as far as, you know, people in the normal, visible, non-black market economy transacting, would we just be stuck with fiat or what? Because I mean, if they see a business like trading in Bitcoin, you know, I'm just hypothetically thinking about this, but if they see a business, you know, operating in Bitcoin and that's legal, then technically they should throw that business in jail. So what do you guys think?
I mean, it depends on where.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if we're talking about the U.S., you know, there's at least for now, there's some semblance of there being, you know, the rule of law, though that's, you know, rapidly decaying. But, you know, if we're talking about some other place with, you know, that's a little bit further along, you know, they might take more drastic measures. But, you know, but also at the same time, like, you know, you take a look at a place, you know, like a literal hell, like North Korea, right? Where it's like they basically, you know, on paper, capitalism or any sort of market is outlawed, they have black markets because otherwise people would fucking starve. You know, like there would be no citizenry if they didn't have, you know, like, so, you know, they didn't permit the black markets to operate. So, you know, in that sense, in the US, like if, you know, things really go to hell and like people can't source food or the money is like, you know, completely worthless, you know, they might have to let Bitcoin and kind of, you know, on the DL, like slide through, you know. It's all circumstantial.
Yeah, I mean, my view on if Bitcoin were banned, what would happen is that exchanges would crack down on buying. So either they would stop selling Bitcoin in general, or there'd be some kind of ridiculous, I don't know, like ridiculous standards that you'd have to fulfill for you to even buy Bitcoin. So maybe it'd be something, you know, like what you do on the stock market or something. You need a certain amount of money to buy, and you need a license or some kind of authority to be able to buy Bitcoin. And so it would be a lot harder for the average normie to be buying Bitcoin as easily as we do. So you wouldn't be buying it on Cash App or any of the regular exchanges that we're so used to using. But then in that same instance, the Bitcoin black market would emerge, and it'd be something on the lines of what happened in the Soviet Union, that the black market became the real market. And so Bitcoin would just be traded peer to peer, and people would be using BISC and, you know, using like Azteca or meeting up with people and buying Bitcoin and doing a lot more peer to peer interactions and transactions with Bitcoin. And then it would just, it'd be subverted in, you know, maybe a short amount of time, maybe a couple of years, but Bitcoin would just overcome and Bitcoiners would find a way around it. And the, you know, like for a short moment, maybe the Bitcoin price would crash while the normie is afraid and they drop their Bitcoin because there's some kind of government 6102 sanction or what have you. And then those that are really diehard about it will just figure out a way around it and route around the government. And, you know, like it'd have to be a grand coordinated action by every government for them to even be able to stop Bitcoin. And so honestly, I don't really see it. Maybe I'm being optimistic and naive, but there's so much institutional consumption, I guess, or exactly. There's been so much institutional awareness and so much institutional money coming into Bitcoin lately that it seems like that won't be even a consideration in the U.S. There, this week alone, we've had so many banks at least giving the eye to Bitcoin. I know it was like J.P. Morgan. There was Morgan Stanley. There was what was it like BYN Mellon, one of the oldest banks.
I mean, BlackRock is the largest asset manager in the world, and they just mentioned today that they're dabbling in it, whatever that means.
Yeah,
Tesla has, you know, like dollars. You're literally ruining markets if you ban it.
Yeah, exactly. And then Chad Saylor again, like doing another freaking Chad
they
buy.
They might try to do like no self-custodying or something like that, but good luck.
Yeah, and I'll go. You guys, if you guys got, but, and even further, like, so there's a Canadian ETF that just got launched. Nick was telling me that NYDIG is working on a ETF, so it seems like the meme institutional money is finally here, and I don't see them being as much crypto anarchists as you know, like Bitcoin plebs are. So they're not going to do anything against the law. And so it seems like the wheels are being greased and Bitcoin's going to get pumped. But you guys, you got to jump in.
A global ban at this moment in time is, and even from the beginning, is practically impossible just due to Bitcoin's innate game theory, right? So, I mean, you could talk about momentarily like local bans in some countries, whether it be here in the US or some other country, well, like, you know, Nigeria, but globally impossible just because of Bitcoin's game theory.
As much as we have been conditioned, rightly so, to hate these elites who run our lives indirectly, who are so entrenched in policy and government and power, it's going to work for us also because they want money just like anybody else, and they see the writing on the wall, and in fact, they have more ability to execute on that. And their entrenchment, in a way, will work for us. Now, with that come a whole suite of new monstrous problems, you know, there's an alternate timeline, you know, somewhere where we diverged in 2017 and the suits never got into it. And there's some underground, you know, rebellion for Bitcoiners. But in this timeline, we'll have corporate America on our side, or at least a decent amount of it. And that will, in some ways, benefit us. I think what we're going to have to do is be a lot smarter. It's because you're not going to have a clear enemy about who the problem is, because right now it's like us versus the state. But it's going to be a lot more gray, where you have, if you're not constantly, you know, if you're not a very ad, if the narrative on the Bitcoin side is not extremely agile and adaptive, you're going to find that there's all of this soft blacklisting of addresses, which has, you know, a whole deep rabbit hole in there. But you're going to find that, you know, they'll be like, yeah, you can use Bitcoin, but you can only use the Bitcoin that we like. And don't underestimate the power of people to do that. I'm not sure of the how technically that's accomplished, but I know it can be, especially when you have, you know, states saying, okay, well, we like Bitcoin, but, you know, we Bitcoin according to our rules. They can try, they can in some ways assert themselves over that. And so luckily Bitcoin is everywhere in the world. So if you want to leave, you could probably find a jurisdiction or place in the world that, you know, allows you to do what you want. But that would probably require a lot of personal sacrifice. If you have a family, I don't know. So, but I'm right now, I will, you know, welcome our corporate overlords for the time being.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always have to have our heads on a swivel. You know, it's like we can't get complacent about things. You know, like, yes, we are. I think, you know, we're on the way to winning right now. A lot of people on Twitter I've seen have kind of declared premature victory. I think that's a pretty bad idea because the people in power, especially those in the state, are going to, you know, like they're going to be, you know, a lot of them are going to realize at some point that they're a cornered animal and they're going to lash out, and who knows what the hell they're going to do. It could start with, like, you know, targeting mining companies and saying, here, implement this blacklist. Don't, you know, don't include these transactions, you know, this or that. So, you know, while we should, you know, obviously we should celebrate all the milestones from, you know, the price milestones and, you know, and that sort of thing, we can't afford to let our guard down right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, because I'm a miner, I look at the first instance in North America of the, you know, we're starting a pool that only that has a, you know, white list of addresses thing. I don't know if we've talked about a Bitcoin kindergarten, but like I think that is probably the future, and it's not this overt state opposition to it. So how do you build a healthy Bitcoin network in that timeline? That's the question I'll be trying to figure out over the next couple decades.
You got to get Iran, you make them buy Bitcoin. It's the mining pools though. Those are the ones that I guess need to, we need to have a variety of mining pools in various jurisdictions, some which are adversarial to the U.S. So, you know, like Iran, North Korea, Venezuela, you know, they'll gladly include your transactions, you know. So I think it's important that we have that sort of variety in the ecosystem, even if, you know, they're located in territories that are technically considered hostile to the U.S. or the West in general.
Yeah, CB, I don't know if we brought that up on an episode, but it's definitely been something that we've been talking about on the back end, so maybe we'll have to bring that up next week or so, because we are hitting close to that hour mark, and we still have one thing on the list, but also we got a question in our chat, and I guess he's in here, so we'll just help him out and answer. But it says, can you guys give a couple sentences or a shill against the FUD about whales dumping after pumps? And I mean, my simple one is it's just part of the market. As the price goes up, people will want to spend their coins. And for those whales that want to dump their coin, well, those coins will get distributed amongst the retail, the plebs that want to pick them up and scoop them up. And in the long run, I don't see it being a problem, because even in the short run, if the price goes down, when they sell their coins, they no longer have the influence over the network like they do with their purchasing power. And so those Bitcoins get distributed amongst other Bitcoiners, and those with the strongest hands will continue to hold Bitcoin. So I look forward to whales dumping their coin because either that means cheaper Bitcoins for us or that means more Bitcoiners. So I welcome it.
Yeah, it never has been a problem. And I mean, if you've been on Bitcoin Twitter the past few years, you might know personally a few of the whales who took some profits off the top and to upgrade their quality of life. And it's not a bad thing at all. I mean, like, it gives you the chance to accumulate more Bitcoin. And over time, we are going to see whales start to lose some of their Bitcoin. Yeah, and over time, one more thing, just over time, like, number go up. So it doesn't matter what they do.
I was going to say, if they want to dump, they can have fun staying poor. Like, at the end of the day, all we want is sats. And, you know, if they want dollars, I mean, that's their prerogative.
Give them to me, baby.
Fire.
I agree.
These cyclical markets are just like full of opportunities for us. Like when the price pumps really high, it kind of gives you an opportunity to like maybe purchase something that you wouldn't otherwise purchase. Not that I'm recommending that, but anytime that anybody sells, like, shit, that's an opportunity for me to stack some more. And that's a fantastic thing for any Bitcoiner that's done their homework and understood like what they're buying at the end of the day.
Bullish. It's all bullish.
Not to rub it in, guys, but in the last correction, I stacked some 29K.
Dang, that hurts.
Stop that right. Knife, man.
Yo, I stacked 50K sats like in between slides when I was presenting.
Let's go.
Jessifer's got the routing transaction to prove it.
Let's go. Well,
timestamp or bust.
Well, we'll wrap this one up since we brought up our buddy Jessifer. I know he noticed it, and I don't know if anyone is actually on it, but I saw that Lightning Labs released their Lightning Pool UI. So, Jessifer, have you been on it? You want to give us some thoughts on that, and then we'll wrap it up for tonight.
I'm so excited for them because like Lightning Labs is just putting out some great stuff. They've been putting a ton of work into L&D because they like maintain that code base, and then Lightning Pool, which is like an ongoing blind auction. So you don't really know where the bids are until they actually get filled. So you don't know like what people are willing to pay for liquidity. But at the end of the day, it's to kind of solve liquidity needs and understand where there is demand all over the network. And so Lightning Labs just released a user interface for that. So you can actually interact with that auction, that ongoing auction in a much more user-friendly way. So really proud of them for this release. I think it'll help a lot of people out because Lightning Pool up to this point has been a command line interface, which is not the most user-friendly thing. But you know what is like the actual technology behind that is beautiful stuff to help people solve liquidity issues, even with people that they have no idea who they are or where they are in the world. It's a fantastic way to like solve financial issues non-custodially all over the world. Super, super awesome.
Yo, so Jessifer, I've got I think I had sent you a message about this. So I got this like, I had something to do with this Loop, this new Loop app. I had downloaded the Loop and totally like agree with you 1,000,000%. Like, so excited because like I gave a presentation on inflation. Like, I'm not a computers guy as much as I am a finance guy, and so I want to make a yield on my Bitcoin, but I don't want to give up custody, right? And so Lightning, initially that's what drew me to it, and it was the ability to do this Loop or not the Loop, the pool, dyslexia. But if you look, there's this like LSAT token that I was curious about, and I was wondering if you had any knowledge of that or could elaborate on that some.
I don't know. I'm sorry. but yes, you can generate yield with like all in sats and using pool. I think the APRs that I've been seeing recently are like between 6% and 8% for like that's annualized for a 2-week commitment to provide liquidity. So that's
and is that what pretty... it is? You're opening a channel. You're like opening an inbound channel to someone.
Yeah, people are bidding to have you open a channel to them, and they also kind of filter out who can participate and who can respond to those bids. Based on like their like Boz score, which is sort of like just an arbitrary metric created by Alex Bosworth to kind of score nodes based on how good he thinks they would be at routing. But like they could use any metric, and I think they might eventually move away from that Boz score, but that's the way that they make sure that the liquidity that is being provided through pool is not total garbage.
Yo, when Jessiverse score is what I want.
I hope that there's no one's name behind it and it's just like a mathematical score that could easily be verified by people.
So
the boss
that was the best
score actually stands for like basis of Satoshis, but you know, we all know what it really stands for.
Yeah, I mean it, yeah, the interface is beautiful. It looks like an exchange. It's almost making me even want to try. I was like, man, hey, but I'm no Jestifer over here, so you know, I'm gonna stay away for the time being.
I'm gonna keep beating this drum. Like, people should get on the Lightning Network, because like if you're curious what the financial infrastructure looks like when like Bitcoin gets banned or some other attack, like we're gonna be moving much more decentralized. And if you are the routing node, like you're gonna be supplying all those payments and you'll be in a fantastic position when transaction fees get high on the Bitcoin network. Like, you'll be actually making yield.
Absolutely, dude. I'm stoked. That's like, wow. That's why it's been so great learning all this Lightning stuff from you. It would be awesome to see you have like a more like a presentation about like how to actually like use pool and become like how to
Jestifer,
run like,
make me Lightning.
How do we make more Lightning with Jestifer?
Make me Lightning.
I'm sharing the pool.
Yeah, I put it on for a quick minute.
Good. I'd love to see it. All of you all should become routing nodes. If you got a stack that you want to like put to work, Lightning's a great way to do it. But Jestifer, anyways, I'll hand it back to Optimus.
I'd be so interested in watching you do that, because I tried to get Lightning pool on my computer and it took so freaking long. Like, I had to get on calls with Ryan Gentry from Lightning Labs. Shout out to Ryan. But like, I don't know what the fuck I was doing wrong, but it did not want to download on my computer. And it took so long.
It's kind of tricky to, especially to start off with some command line interface. So I'm really excited that they have a GUI for it now.
So what am I look? So this is saying 60 basis points. Like, I'm like, what? I'm not sure what I'm really looking at here in the UI. So you have to make an account. It seems you have to begin buying and selling channels. You need to deposit funds to a non-custodial account. So do you have to give up custody then? Is it a multi-sig?
Let's get Ryan Gentry in here, and he'll be an expert, because I don't want to misrepresent their product.
It's a 2 of 2 multi-sig, and you have one of the keys. So
got it.
Well, Jestifer, you're our in-house Lightning guy, so we'll leave that one up for you, bro.
Good, thanks.
All right, guys. Well, we ran a little long today, but we had a huge class. It was super bullish. I had a great time. I love all you guys. This was incredibly fun. Hopefully the listeners got something from it. I know we joke around a lot, but that's just part of being a Bitcoiner. We're very serious when it comes to Bitcoin, but we also know that shitposting's the way. And so as we watch Bitcoin take over the world, we have to enjoy ourselves. So I hope that you guys enjoyed yourself, because that's just what being a Bitcoiner is about, is, you know, laughing as the world is about to crumble. So hope you learned some things. And well, Nick, you want to say the last word, or are we good to go?
Shit posts or get the fuck out.
Let's go.
Sure, yes, sir.
Grunder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, how could I forget? How could I forget? All right. So last week we did over under 55K. Ben and Bitbong, or Bing Bong, were the only ones that said under 55K but over 50. So I don't know. We'll have to think of a prize, something. I don't know. We'll give you a gold star or something, Ben. But Ben was the only one that was right. We were all super bullish last week, and I guess we got caught up in our bullishness. It's still bullish since last week, but not that bullish. But anyways, this week, for next week, the over-under is going to be 60K. We're going to be moving in multiples of 10s from here on out. So, over-under 60K, guys.
Either. Over.
Over. I'm usually the under guy. I'm over.
Yeah, I'm going to go over, too.
Let's go.
Sad squeeze.
Sad squeeze. Imagine. Let's go.
Oh.
All right, guys, I think, let me see, make sure the chat's
over.
Everyone's saying over, dude. So send it, boys. Everyone better be stacking their asses off this week, because as the Space Cat always says, we may never see these prices again. So with that, guys, we're going to end this episode. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Let's go. Under, no, Weinikus, no, under. Whoa, Weinikus, I think we're gonna boot you.
I just wanted to take the field.
all right, later, guys. I'm gonna end the recording.
Damn,
peace
rainbowed
out.
Rainbowed emoji.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right, peace out, dudes.